Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine, the second part of our podcast with Rick Smith, who, with co-author Bruce Lurie, has written a great book called Tox In, Tox Out, Getting Harmful Chemicals Out of Our Bodies and Our World. And the book is a great sequel to their first book, Slow Death by Rubber Duck, which is a classic book pointing out the hazards of chemicals in our environment. And this book reiterates some of the themes of Slow Death by Rubber Duck, but it also provides practical advice and guidelines on how to detoxify, how to get the toxins out. So, Rick, tell us a little bit about some of the different methodologies that are employed to detoxify.
Well, let me start with what might seem obvious, but actually, in this day and age, can be a little bit challenging, and that is to try to avoid further exposure to these chemicals.
Right, that's the main theme, obviously.
Yeah. And so we provide a lot of tips in the book. In fact, the whole book boils down to our top 10 list based on our experimentation of things that people can do that we know for sure will dramatically lower levels of chemicals in their bodies. So just to touch on a few avoidance
Please.
Things, there's only a few ways that these chemicals can enter your body, if you think about it. One way is through what you eat. And so we've chatted about the importance of eating more organic food. Another way that chemicals can enter your body is through what you apply to your skin, the products you use in the bathroom. A lot of these products, of course, shaving products, moisturizing creams, antiperspirants, a lot of these products are specifically designed to be rapidly absorbed through the skin. So no surprise that a lot of the individual ingredients of these products increasingly show up in your bloodstream. So,
incidentally, if I could interrupt you for just a second, one of our podcasts just this week was on that theme. We talked to Karen Sinclair Drake about, she's into a natural model for skincare products, and has talked to us about some of the harmful ingredients that are present in skincare products. Also, an interesting sidelight, not so much that it's an environmental toxin, but a certain percentage of people have celiac disease. And there actually is some documentation that if you have gluten and flour-like products in skincare products, that it can create systemic reactions for people who are that sensitive.
So, right. You know,
so there's a whole yeah. science now too, and a whole trend. And you actually give credit to some of the companies that have taken innovative steps towards cleaning up their act in the cosmetic business.
Well, I'm very optimistic actually that the market is headed in the right direction here. Just in the last 6 months, Procter & Gamble, Avon, Johnson & Johnson, Walmart, some of the biggest consumer product manufacturers and retailers have started to target chemicals like parabens and phthalates to get out of their products. In the meantime, as that's happening, we have a lot of tips in the book to look out for on labels that people should try to avoid. And as you say, we get quite specific in the book about brands that are trying to do better and companies that are not moving on these issues. So, the products you use in the bathroom, what you apply to your skin is one real important source of a lot of these chemicals. The other area that we look at is what we breathe. And we do this experiment in the book on the new car smell, that wonderful new car smell that we're all trained to love so much.
In fact, you could buy it in a can. If your car has faded, you actually refresh the new car smell. I don't know why you'd want to do that, because God knows what's in that. You could spray it around your car and just feel like that 1999 Chevy Impala is right off the showroom floor.
Well, that's right, so the new car smell, that new shower curtain smell that we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
So many of these artificial aromas in cleaning products, lemons and strawberries and all these very heavy artificial scents that we grow up with and we're very familiar with. We ask the question in the book, are these smells potent enough that they can measurably impact our body levels of these toxic chemicals. And so I did this experiment in the book where I sat in a new car for 8 hours breathing in the off-gassing, breathing in the new car smell, and then measured my levels of certain cancer-causing chemicals before and after, things like benzene.
You did get the approval of the guy in the showroom to sit in the car, right? Did he say, sir, it's time, you know, your test drive is over, you've got to get out, closing.
We drove it off the lot. We rented a car for the day, and weren't entirely straight with a company about what we were doing. But
good.
We drove it off the lot, we parked it, and we sat in it for a day. But the punchline here is that chemicals like benzene, formaldehyde, these very nasty chemicals, dramatic
documented carcinogens. Straight away, we're not even talking about it, the settled science about those causing problems. They are actually banned in chemistry labs.
That's right. So these chemicals dramatically increased in my body through the course of this experiment. So the message here being that being careful as a consumer to buy products that don't off-gas as much, frequenting retailers like IKEA, for instance, who are trying really hard to reduce levels of a lot of these chemicals in their products, that can make a real difference to your body's chemical levels as well. So once you've done that and followed the tips in our book and you try to avoid further exposure to these chemicals, the next question is, what can you do to help your body out to accelerate the flushing of these chemicals? And so we delve into the whole weird world of detox therapies, and we experiment with a lot of them to try to figure out what works and what doesn't work so well. And, I think that part of the book is actually quite entertaining.
Indeed. And you actually rate some of the different detoxification methods. Of course, you know, there's fasting, but fasting has its pros and cons. You know, surely fasting will cause you to, in effect, mobilize some of your fat. Toxins are stored in fat, but there's some disadvantages you found to fasting as a means of detoxification.
Yeah, we looked at some of the recent evidence on this, medical evidence and scientific evidence, and some of the most basic approaches to detox would seem to be the most effective. So, for instance, there's some very interesting recent evidence that regular exercise actually measurably lowers toxin levels in your body. So,
just by sweating, building up a sweat.
Yeah, and of course, everybody knows that regular exercise is important for cardiovascular health, for general well-being, but it also turns out that getting your heart pumping, as you say, mobilizing some of the fat in your body, that can actually have an appreciable effect on your toxic chemical levels. And sweating, it turns out, can dramatically affect your toxic chemical levels in a way that that other mechanisms don't. So my co-author Bruce Laurie did this experiment where he did a sauna therapy for a week. Uh-huh. He sauna'd regularly for a week, and then he measured the levels of BPA and a couple of other chemicals coming out of his body in his urine versus in his sweat. So if you can imagine Bruce, you know, he was, very,
scooping up his sweat.
He was scooping up his sweat, sticking it in test tubes, and then trying to compare chemical levels in his urine over the same time period. And very interesting, there were dramatically higher levels of BPA coming out in his sweat.
Interesting.
Than there was coming out in his urine. So depending on the chemical you're talking about, getting up off your couch, getting regular exercise, breaking a sweat every now and again, turns out to have a dramatic impact on your toxic chemical levels.
Well, absolutely. You know, as you know, the Hubbard, the L. Ron Hubbard detoxification method, which was developed by the founder of Scientology, was based on, to some extent, exercise and sweating in a sauna. And, you know, regardless of what you might think about Scientology, he was on the ball in terms of his understanding of how to promote detoxification, and very prescient.
Yeah, there's some stuff in that therapy that I'm kind of skeptical of, but certainly
the high dose niacin, for example, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, but the sweating certainly, according to some recent evidence, is a good way to go. One of the things we try to convey in the book is that looking at detox as a one-off or as a kind of quick fix is just not going to work. Common sense would dictate that if you eat crummy food 51 weeks of the year and you don't get a lot of exercise 51 weeks of the year, you're not going to reduce your toxic chemical levels by going on a broccoli blender diet for that last week of the year. It's just not going to...
Or as the French do, they have a crise de foie, a crisis of the liver. They go to the health spa for a week and they take the cure and atone for their Galois and their cognac. That's not going to cut it.
So, I mean, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So, you know, every men's health magazine you open these days, every woman's health magazine you open these days is almost guaranteed to have an article about detox.
Quick 5-day detox.
Yeah. And very often, one of the things to look for in these detox, in these alleged detox therapies is, are they specific about what chemicals they are helping you to detox from? And if they aren't really specific about the chemicals, because all these chemicals we're talking about have different characteristics in the body. As we've just talked about with sweating, some of them are better sweated out than they are peed out, for instance. Unless a detox therapy tells you rather specifically what chemicals it's aiming at, chances are it's not going to have much of an effect, much of a beneficial effect. You know, a lot of these potions and pills may not harm you, but especially the more expensive ones, they're probably not going to help all that much.
I will tell you a practical problem that we have in the state of New York, which is that unlike you, perhaps in Canada, or perhaps you access tests of a special nature, tests that measure levels of environmental toxins in people are not generally available through normal physician channels. They're simply outlawed in the state of New York. In many other states, they are available. But in order to get checked out, you have to be the victim of an industrial accident. You can go to an occupational health center, and they'll, you know, if you fall into a vat of formaldehyde or something, they may check you. But other than that, it's hard for the public to become aware of levels of toxins. So one almost has to presumptively attack the problem because the tests are expensive, and sometimes they're hard to obtain.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we talk about this in the last chapter of the book. There's a real difference between, for instance, diet books and diet prescriptions and this toxic chemical issue. And the difference is this. If you're on a diet, if you're following, you know, the Scarsdale diet or the South Beach diet or all these crazy diets out there, some of them aren't crazy, but there's a bewildering
trendy diets, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bewildering assortment of them. If you're following a diet and you're not shedding the pounds, chances are you're not going to continue with that diet. There's a kind of inbuilt quality control with diets that's obvious. Not so much this toxic chemical issue, as you say. I mean, it's very difficult for people to know what their toxic chemical levels are, whether what they're doing is having any effect or not. And so that's why in our two books, we tried to do this direct experimentation to nail down definitively what works, what doesn't work when it comes to different detox methods.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you've heard this from any of the experts that you interviewed, but actually one of the theories as to why it's hard for some people to lose weight is because when you lose weight, you mobilize toxins, which may act as poisons to our energy burning pathways. And in effect, you get a less efficient metabolism because of the toxins being released into your system. So it's almost like a a self-defeating cycle. The toxins are locked into your fat. You mobilize some of them, but then it's much harder to break down the fat just precisely because the toxins are released into your bloodstream.
Well, there is a very interesting relationship, a very worrisome relationship between weight and toxins. And, you know, as one example of this, there's some recent evidence emerging on the Teflon family of chemicals.
Yeah, the perfluoro hydrocarbons.
Yeah, and the fact that this family of chemicals is so common in our daily lives, not just in frying pans, but you know, you see Teflon chemicals now in things like windshield wiper fluid in cars. You see it in as a coating on upholstered products.
Flame retardants.
Flame retardants. You know, different family of chemicals, but also very common. Also very common in furniture. But a lot of evidence now that these chemicals are, because they're hormonally active, because they're easily absorbed into the body, that they actually are impacting our body's weight regulation systems, as you say. How ironic that, after years of, Morgan Spurlock's and others' warnings about the impact of greasy fast food, and the kind of saturated fats in those foods impacting our weight, that in fact it might also be the packaging,
right?
The non-stick coatings in fast food packaging that is also contributing to the obesity epidemic.
Precisely, yeah. So clearly, these are, one has to be selective about detoxification. One of the themes that you pick up in the book in talking to practitioners, you found that supplementation, it's unclear which supplements are most helpful to promote detoxification. But one theme that was reiterated by many of the practitioners you talked to, and I'll echo this, is that N-acetylcysteine can be helpful because it's a glutathione precursor, and we need glutathione to help the body with certain detoxification pathways.
Yeah, we talked to some folks who were quite keen on that, and I think it's fair to say that we try to make things easy and digestible for folks in the book. So we try to boil down the competing evidence on these detox therapies into one table that's in one of the later chapters in the book, and some detox methods clearly work. So things like sweating. Some detox methods clearly do not work, and that's things like ionic foot baths.
No, for sure not. Although it will give you a nice toxic-looking muck when you stick your feet in there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're very pleasant. They're very pleasant.
But it's a sleight of hand kind of thing.
Yeah. And then there's some detox therapies that are somewhere in the middle where the evidence is equivocal at the moment as to whether it's helpful or not. And, cysteine and glutathione would be in that category.
And then, of course, there's chelation therapy, but that targets not so much the environmental chemicals we've been talking about, but heavy metals, things like mercury, lead, and so on. And that is a problem, but it's a problem that due to a little bit more environmental vigilance, somewhat decreasing, at least as far as lead is concerned.
Yeah, we actually, my co-author traveled to a chelation clinic in Texas, actually, to delve into the world of chelation. And very very clearly, chelation works. It's a heavy-duty therapy that necessitates running a solvent through an intravenous through your body. Very clearly, it dramatically mobilizes heavy metals in your body, allows you to pass heavy metals in a way that you wouldn't otherwise. Very important for occupational reasons, folks that might be exposed to heavy metals in the workplace. Some of these folks that we've talked about who maybe are mercury or lead, whose bodies don't metabolize these heavy metals in a way that they should. But as opposed to some detox remedies that we talk about in the book that are easily incorporated into the daily lives of people, chelation, not so much. I mean, it's really quite an invasive thing. Should only be undertaken with some medical or naturopath supervision, and not for everybody.
Right. I'm certainly a partisan of chelation. It's a therapy that I administer at my clinic and can be helpful, but it only handles one small slice of the toxicity problem.
Right. Right.
And then you actually have you reserve some criticism for. Various types of detox products that are on the market.
Yeah, I think, look, we're a consumer culture. People are, whether it's over social media or whether it's, TV ads, I mean, we are all inundated by advertising every day. And it's increasingly important to be an informed and a questioning consumer And we, this is a big part of the book. I mean, we give people pointers on what to look for on labels, chemical names to avoid when present on labels. And so applying that same critical thought as a consumer to some of these detox therapies is also important. And if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. If it seems too much of a fad, it's probably not worth it. I am concerned that, though on the one hand, getting people to think about detox as a concept is useful, folks shelling out, big dollars for some of these fad detox diets and what have you, I mean, that's not necessary to get a start on this problem.
And what about, this is the time of year where a lot of people are seeding their lawns, they're going through all kinds of ritual preparations for the summer season to make their lawn the greenest lawn on the block. I had a patient in, a few months ago, and she had a very pervasive brain disorder that was beyond Parkinson's disease. It was like every part of her brain was affected, and it wasn't Alzheimer's disease. It was hard to characterize. And one of my first questions was, had you had any industrial exposure? And she said mm-hmm. no, and the family said no, and using any specific chemicals, did you have an occupation that exposed you? No, down the line. And we went through the entire consultation, and then I glanced at her intake form, and I noticed that her address was 11 Golf Lane. And I asked her husband, I said, by any chance, do you live in a retirement community adjacent to a golf course? And she says, yes, we do. It's really beautiful. We're right on the green. Our home is right located on the golf green. And I said, oh my goodness, do you realize how much they saturate the golf green with pesticides and herbicides and various types of organophosphate chemicals that can be damaging to the nervous system that could get into your system? And it was like, a disconnect.
Absolutely. I mean, pesticides remain a huge problem in our lives. I mean, we've spent 50 years as a society pumping these cancer-causing chemicals into the environment. The good news here is that organic food is on the rise, whether it's in the United States or, anywhere you look around the world. The year over year growth of the organic industry is double digits. It's very exciting. And the more people buy organic food, the cheaper it gets. So that cost differential between organic fruits and veggies and non-organic fruits and veggies is narrowing by the day. There are, when it comes to lawn pesticides, there's been big progress in some jurisdictions around the world to try to limit the impact of these pesticides, to try to better regulate what pesticides people can spray on their lawns. Here in Canada, for instance, in most of our provinces, the number of lawn pesticides that you can use, including golf courses, is actually quite restrictive. And though at the time these new regulations passed, the garden industry prophesied doom and apocalypse,
right?
And that we'd all be taken over by we'd all be suffocated by dandelions. It turns out not to be the case. And so we can dramatically reduce the number of pesticides in our daily lives and be just fine.
And in working with people who maintain lawns, I have a lawn myself. You can specify the least exposure to harmful chemicals, or you can actually decide that you're not going to go with a traditional lawn. You may decide to go with sort of a less manicured look. It's a trade-off, because if you have small kids playing or pregnant women who may be sitting on the lawn or walking barefoot, you may want to eschew some of those chemicals altogether.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, it's very clear that that some of these pesticides are more noxious than others, if you're susceptible to these kinds of things, it's best to try to avoid them altogether.
So In sum, what is our intelligent medicine call to action vis-a-vis your new book, Talks In, Talks Out? Where can people get more information?
They can go to our website, toxintoxout.org, T-O-X-I-N-T-O-X-O-U-T.org, and they can find lots of great web links there. They can buy the book there.
Lots of resources in terms of sources of natural products, products that are chemical-free.
Yeah, lots of resources. And that's right. And I'm hugely optimistic about the direction this topic is taking. When our first book came out in 2009, we traveled around the country talking to people about BPA and these toxic chemicals, and inevitably people would look at it blankly and not know what we're talking about. And as we're this month, last month, as we're talking to people about this new book, Talks In, Talks Out, the level of awareness is much, much higher. Non-toxic products are much easier to get, and so things are moving in the right direction.
Okay, well, we want to green our bodies, green our environment, and I want to thank you, Rick Smith, and your co-author, Bruce Lurie, for dramatically increasing our knowledge base vis-a-vis this critical topic. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.